Hi, today is January 3rd, 2021. This is Mobile Views Podcast 346. I'm Tom Nassimura with my friend John Westfall. I almost pronounced my own name wrong.
Well, that's not a good way to start off 2021, but I guess it's better than some of the things from 2020, so.
Yeah.
If your biggest problem in 2021 is mispronouncing your own last name, I'll be fine with that.
Anyway, well, so here we are.
Not happy notes. Yeah, here we are. 2021.
Yeah. Or as somebody, one of our friends put it, 2021.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it beat us down. Anyway, so one of the things I wanted to note actually came up because I did a blog item last night, which I'll mention in a few minutes. But I realized that, you know, even though I said I'm not planning to buy any Chromebook in the near future because I'm so happy with my MacBook Air, the M1 version, and I am. I realized I do want to buy one, and here's the reason. So, you know, you might remember, John, last year I fruitlessly waited to see if I could get a 2020 Chromebook Duet from Amazon specifically. I mean, I could have gotten it from Best Buy, where a number of friends bought it from, and so forth, but I just didn't want to. And because Chromebooks in general were so popular during the pandemic, you know, because a lot of kids were getting them for their schoolwork, and a lot of, you know, adults were buying them because they're inexpensive and generally work, you know, really well for 90% of what most of us need to do. Anyway, I waited, and it never became easily available. There were refurbished models that were exorbitant prices, like, you know, 50% more over list and crazy things like that. Anyway, they finally became more or less available a couple of weeks ago, and I actually saw one in person for the first time. A coworker bought one, and we happened to be in the office at the same time, which is kind of unusual. But he had brought it in, and I took a look at it. Didn't touch it, but I, you know, stood sort of socially distant and looked at it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was really impressed. It's hard to beat a $279 product, and I think it's actually on sale these days for like $250. And then I remembered just last night when I was, and I said, "Oh, that's cool," but I'm not going to buy one because I don't need one anymore. I've got my M1, and I've got a bunch of other Chromebooks. It's not a big deal. But then last night I wrote a blog item about using my Lenovo Flex 5, and you know that Lenovo USI pen that I ranted about because it fell apart when I took it apart to look at the battery, which is a removable battery, by the way. It's not, you know, that it's designed not to be taken apart like the Apple Pencil. You don't want to take that apart, generally speaking. Anyway, so I wrote about using the Flex 5 and Lenovo USI pen, universal stylus initiative, I think, and Infinite Painter, which is a paid for drawing app for Android and iOS. Anyway, and I realized as I was writing the article about my doodle project on it, I remember why I wanted the Duet now. I wanted it because it's a convertible, detachable, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. So the other Chromebooks I have with touch screens, and they all have touch screens, but the other Chromebooks I have are 2-in-1, maybe that's a convertible. Okay, that's a convertible where, you know, you fold the screen 180 degrees, I guess, so that, or maybe 360, whatever, so that the keyboard's on the bottom, the screen's on top, because it's kind of a tablet. But they're really bulky, right? And it's weird having your keyboard in the bottom. They're deactivated at that point, but it's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And generally not a great experience, in my opinion. They're just too heavy. I don't know how people used the big Wacoms in old days, but I guess people can adapt to anything. But having used an iPad Pro and an Apple Pencil for 4 years now, you know, I'm just kind of used to that weight and sort of attitude of the device. Anyway, the Chromebook Duet is a detachable, you know, Chromebook. So it comes with a keyboard, but the keyboard can pull off of the screen, and you can use it as a tablet, and it supports a USI stylus like the Flex 5. And so, oh, now I remember why I wanted one. I wanted wanted an inexpensive Chromebook or Chrome OS tablet to play with for doodling and other kind of tasks that I normally use an iPad Pro for. Anyway, it's a long-winded story, but so I'm now on the watch for some 2021 detachable Chromebook solution. Hopefully, whatever Hopefully, Lenovo has a 2021 model coming out that's maybe a little faster. That'd be kind of nice. But at any rate, so that's up on my blog. And mm-hmm. and before we get started into the heart of the of our discussion today, I have a kind of a rant. My first M1 MacBook Air rant, which I love. I love that device, but it's got one quirk, and I noticed it early on and didn't bother me because I was so happy at everything else. If I use this Anker hub with a 60-watt PD port, power distribution port, with it, almost everything I own that has a USB-C charger. So all the Chromebooks, the MacBook Pro that I use for this podcast, everything. And it works fine. It charges everything. Even the MacBook Pro 2019 model, which has a 61-watt charger that it ships with, and the Anker is only 60, but no problem. Charges up just fine. In fact, it's 100% now. However, the MacBook Air, the M1 MacBook Air 2020, which only ships with a 30-watt charger, so you'd think a 60-watt PD port would charge it up just fine. It only slow charges. In fact, it shows it's not charging, connected to battery, but not charging when I'm actively using the MacBook Air and plugged into it. And it slow charges like 8 hours to charge the MacBook Air from, say, 50% if I, leave the lid closed. So that's not good. Now, the MacBook Air does ship with a charger, so that's not a huge issue, but it's irritating. And I do have another charger whose brand name I can't remember, but it's a 100-watt PD port that charges just fine when it's in use. So a little bit puzzling, very annoying. Not a showstopper, but certainly a surprise. Given that, like I said, it ships with a 30-watt, and it's only and the PD port is 60-watt, so a little bit surprising.
A weird quirk again of USB-C in a sense, and that's something I don't think after, 5 years or so of USB-C being very common in the wild, it's still amazing to me how capricious it is in a sense of what will work, what won't work, what will work fast, what will not work fast, how fast it will go. It's a lot of mixed signals for a connector.
Yeah. Yeah, and in particular, because the Anker has been so good with everything, it works with everything else, including the 2019 MacBook Pro, which, as I said, has twice the watt draw, presumably, that wattage draw that the 2020 MacBook Air does. But, it's not like I said, it's not a showstopper, so it's a rant, but it's not a show-stopping rant. Anyway, John had a great idea for a topic, because we didn't really have much to talk about this week.
Yeah, so I kind of went back through and I looked at our first show from 2016. So that is now 5 years back, and looked at some of the things we were discussing and jog people's memories. 2016 was the year that the iPhone 7 would eventually be released in the fall.
Yep.
And the first rumors about AirPods were starting to come out. And of course, that was one of the big things about AirPods was they're going to have nothing connecting them, and you're going to have a case that they have to charge in. And I think Todd famously said that everyone would lose at least one or two of them, which I've thus far avoided, but perhaps some people have. Of course, Apple does let you buy individual AirPods, so I guess someone has lost an AirPod in the past.
Yeah. I've come very close, by the way, because it falls out of my ear all the time, which is why I don't walk outside with them. Although I have, and it has fallen underground. Fortunately, not cracked. But
the only time one fell out of my ear while I was walking was when a low tree branch was lower than I thought, and I hit it with my head.
AirPod flying out.
Yeah, that was it's problems of being taller.
Yeah, you are a big guy.
Tree branches come at you. And then the other thing that was interesting with the iPhone 7 that year was that the rumor was coming out that we weren't going to get a 3.5 millimeter jack.
Yes,
and it's which interesting to me. To think about how some people are still angry about the 3.5 millimeter jacks within the geek community. You still find people that are very sad about the lack of them. But no one seems to think Apple made a huge mistake with the AirPods. And many people have copied the AirPods since. So just kind of interesting to think about if we had gone back 5 years and looked at those two items again, would we have come to the same conclusions? Would we have guessed that one would still be somewhat controversial, one would be completely the norm for new headphones? And the AirPods brand obviously has gotten much bigger than just one set. Although absolutely. I did pull out this morning to check out my first gen AirPods, and they're still charging and still working fairly well, other than a stark contrast to one device I pulled out this morning that's less than a year old that looks like it's dead in the water right Uh-oh. Now. So I am, happy with the build quality.
Yeah, I should.
And so,
well, go ahead.
I was just going to go on to what is in the next 5 years. But
I was going to say that, so the Pixel 2 from Google lost its mini headphone jack also, shortly after Apple did away with its mini headphone jack, 3.5 millimeter jack. But my Pixel 4a has got it back. So I just want to say. So, it's back, baby. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. It looks good. It's sitting on the top of the 4a with a USB-C on the bottom. So I can use either a regular headphone, a legacy headphone, or a USB-C headphone. And I'm a pretty happy camper. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that's I still think it's the right way to go. I don't think it's any thicker. In fact, I'm going to say it looks, I don't think the 4A is any thicker than the 11 Pro, non-max, 11, whatever you want to call it. It's not a mini, but. And I'm still afraid of losing my AirPods Pro, or at least one of them. I still am kind of paranoid about that.
I will notice because if I'm wearing both, as soon as one comes out, whatever I'm listening to stops playing.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good, clear sign. And plus my ear, I noticed that it's getting looser and I tend to just push it back in if it's a problem.
Right.
So my thought is that was 5 years ago. What are we thinking 5 years from now? Hopefully, if the world does not end in the next 5 years, we might be able to look back on this. This episode and see what we were thinking about. And so I was thinking about what is a debate right now that I think will be settled in 5 years.
Mm.
And so I can walk through mine, and then if you have some, you can go through yours. The first one is an emphasis on privacy.
Oh.
I think, definitely with certain groups pushing it more in the last few years, I think more and more people are either going to outright take their data back or choose providers that prioritize privacy over lower price points.
Really? That's interesting. Okay.
I do. Because I'm just thinking that people are starting to think about when you don't pay for something, especially now that a lot of providers are forcing you to pay for something.
Right.
Google is pulling away a lot of its freebies with Google Photos storage and things like that. Apple, the free tier of iCloud has always basically been worthless if you have more than one device.
Yep.
Apple really wants you on a bundle anymore. And I just see someone who is going, well, I had been using Google because they were free, and now I'm paying for both Google and Apple, and I don't feel like maybe Google is protecting my data as much. Or, I see these ads still, or I see user analytics data being sold. And So I think that might become a bigger issue, and I definitely think Apple plans on pressing it as a bigger issue over the next 5 years.
I'm going to say that amongst our friends, basically nerds and geeks, I think that's absolutely true. I think for the general public, I don't think they even know. Don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's getting more noticeable, but you're right.
Yeah.
Among the general, they don't think too
the
much
The tech
about
civilians.
It.
Let's call them the tech civilians.
The more Apple keeps running ads where that's all they talk about, though, the more the tech civilians might start to notice.
And that's possible, and if anybody's good at marketing, it's Apple. And if they want to start marketing privacy, it's going to happen. That said, I think the pricing question is even more interesting, the one you just brought up. I think with Google's Google One, which is their, which preceded Apple One, by the way. Mm-hmm. So Google One, which is their storage, and actually that's about it. Does Google One give you anything else but storage? It's pretty pricey, considering it's just storage. And with the loss of unlimited photo storage starting this July, I think. And I should say that's loss of unlimited going forward. If you have, gigabytes and gigabytes and gigabytes of stuff stored in Google Photos now, it will continue to be stored there for free. But anything you add will go to whatever your limit is. And Google estimated that I'm going to hit my limit. I pay for 100 gigabytes through Google One. I forget what I pay. It's a couple bucks a month, I think, like $3 a month. I pay for 100 gigabytes a month because I have other storage requirements aside from, well, you know, in addition to the currently free Google Photos. But it says I'll use my storage at my current storage rate in about 4 years, which, you know, I don't know how true that is, but I'll take their word for it. They probably know more about me than I do because, you know, no privacy.
Well, when you retire, you're going to have more time to take photos.
I was going to think I'm going to take less photos because I'm going to go fewer places.
Oh. I thought you would just, you know, do longer photo shoots.
Could be.
Yeah. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with, I think people might start to notice now that they're paying for it. You know, what am I really getting out of it if I pay for it?
Yeah. But I'm actually... Yeah, we're actually asking that question now, you know. So, you know, what should we switch over to? And I already pay for Apple One because of you. So I've got a terabyte of data there for photos, you know, which is plenty. That's a lot. And I also have an annual subscription to Microsoft Office 365, which is $100 a year. So it's actually cheaper than Apple One by orders of magnitude for the same amount of storage. So, you know, that's another possibility. And I have found I've been using OneDrive, Microsoft OneDrive, a lot more recently. The personal edition, you know, at work, of course, that's what I use. But for personal use, my personal OneDrive, I find I've been using it more. And I need to start looking at, you know, what to use. Because I had been using Google Drive for most of my storage needs up until now. But I think that's going to change to preserve space for the photos after July. Yeah. That's going to be kind of interesting.
The other related note, and maybe this is something that will only be with the non-tech civilians, the tech, I don't know, what are the tech military, I guess we're talking about, is thinking about air gapping for all, which by that I mean people becoming more interested in holding the keys to their data rather than relying on the big players to secure them. So, you know, things like cold crypto wallets come to mind. And even if you think about how Apple secures your iCloud backup with your, you know, PIN from your device, where you cannot decrypt it without that PIN.
Right.
I just think that people are going to start to say, okay, if I'm going to put things in the cloud, how do I know that the cloud isn't spying on me from within?
Good point.
So we'll have to see where that goes.
And I think that has become more of an issue for people, you know, as sort of the non-techies get more and more passwords over the last 5 or 10 years, you know, where it's become crazy, right? Especially as we've gone through all cloud services for, you know, all kinds of stuff. Now you have your, you know, 5 different streaming services. Well, maybe not that many for most people, but you might have 1 or 2 streaming services, and you've got, you know, 1 or 2 cloud backup solutions, and you've got email, and, you know, it's pretty soon you're up to a couple dozen passwords. Unless you use the same one, which is a bad idea in itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole idea of air, sort of air gapping yourself from the rest of the world, especially after the solar winds, you know, news that hit a couple of, 2 weeks ago now, I guess. Yeah, I think that's going to be really interesting. That will be really interesting. And then there are already people like you who do things like, you know, have your own personal NAS. And of course, our good buddy Eric Hicks, who... He set up his own VMware servers years ago.
I remember
he had one at his home and one at his parents' home or something like that. So they're geographically separated and backed up. You know, but most of us aren't going to do that. Although we'd like
most,
to.
Most, but we'll have to see. It'll be interesting to see what people do. And like I said, over the next 5 years, if certain groups really start pushing privacy, maybe we'll start seeing it. And the other, so the next thing,
This
is something you can weigh in on with your purchase of the M1 MacBook.
Sure.
You know, the desktop will look more like mobile, but not in the ways we've been talking about for the last 5-10 years. You know, we always thought about it as low power chips, but then we're going to have, you know, a severe performance drop.
Right.
So we need, you know, if you look at the Raspberry Pi, we need something that doesn't have very high computing resources. Maybe we'll be doing something like, you know, akin to dumb terminals again, where we're connecting to a cloud infrastructure and who cares how fast the actual local device is. And then Apple Silica comes out and says, well, we could do low power and great performance. Why don't we do that? And I think unless Intel can figure out how to copy that with ARM or another platform, it's going to be bad news for Intel, because I think we're going to see definitely ideas from mobile come over to desktop, but not the compromises from mobile coming over to desktop.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, the MacBook Air with the M1 chip does not feel like a performance compromise to me. Now, maybe if I were some high-end video editor or, you know, a semi-professional videographer, I might notice it. And I haven't edited any video on it, so I just don't know. Although the reviews I've seen say it's just fine, even the 8 GB version. So performance issues, none. On the other hand, you know, the one, and it's only sample of one, it's very old, you know, the 2012 Windows RT, Surface RT, was a pig. It also was not compatible with much of anything. So that was not a good experience at all compared to the M1, which runs everything I've thrown at it. Yes, there are a few things that probably don't run well on it yet, most notably audio software, which is why I'm still using a MacBook Pro to record this and to edit it. But otherwise, boy, it's a winner, and it's cool. You know, my MacBook Pro is already heating up. Skype does that to a MacBook Pro. I don't think I've done any video conferencing on my M1. But you know, for everything else, it doesn't really heat up much. And of course, the battery lasts forever, which is amazing. But I'm wondering, because yeah, I thought I read the other day that Microsoft, you know, which has had its Windows on ARM for a while now, is looking at either producing its own chips or, you know, moving to ARM in a very serious way. Of course, unless they get the x86, x64 compatibility issue straightened out. I guess the x32 is running okay, but you know, the 64-bit stuff is still dicey. I don't see why anybody would want to use it. You can't even run Chrome on it, right? I mean, unless you know. So I think Intel has a lot to worry about if Microsoft ever figures it out, but Microsoft always takes forever to figure these things out. Well, so
maybe 5 years.
Yeah. Maybe in 5 years it'll be a different story. Heck, 5 years ago, if you told me I'd have an ARM-based MacBook Air, I would have like tried to reach out across the screen and, you know, slap you a little, going, "Hey, come on, dude, stop dreaming. That's not going to happen."
So, speaking of a dream,
yeah,
USB-C for everything.
Oh yeah,
a nice dream. Yes. And I'm only going to give this a maybe because really, USB-C has been around for a while. I'm still surprised at the number of micro USB connectors I see. You know, this year I bought a number of pieces of tech that they didn't need USB-C from a perspective of, you know, data bandwidth or anything like that. Yeah. But they could have gone to USB-C for not very much more than what micro USB was. And they still chose to go with micro USB.
Yeah.
So I find that interesting. I'm hoping, you know, I would like to not have to carry around micro USB cables as well as USB-C cables.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how it's sort of a crapshoot today when you get a new accessory, if it's going to charge over USB-C or USB or micro USB.
Yeah, that's a good point. In fact, I think that Akai MIDI controller I bought needs a, is it a mini USB? I got to go look for it. I'll go look it up. It's kind of too far away for me to grab right now. But it's a micro USB, not even a mini USB.
A mini,
yeah. The old school, bigger one.
Well, it doesn't seem like it makes much sense. You know, one of the things I got for Christmas was a Nightcore 10,000 or 1,000 lumen flashlight.
Okay.
You know, it's rechargeable over USB. It's a very nice little flashlight. And it uses micro USB. Now, this is a $60, you know, everyday carry, very bright flashlight using micro USB. And yet, I bought about a year ago a IR repeater, basically to send infrared signals to some candles across the room, because I have these little candles that are, they don't connect to anything, but the IR repeater can, so I could turn them on and off automated by sending the signal. And that used USB-C. And so $10 device using USB-C.
Wait, what kind of candles are we talking about here?
We're talking about those fake USB, or not USB, but AAA-powered candles that come with a little remote. And so you can
Got
turn
it.
Them on. put little colors on them. Well, there's no way to network those things unless you just emulate the remote signal being sent over the air.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Which I played with for a while, but, you know, it's just, that's what the weirdness with USB-C is. Pay $10, get USB-C device. Pay $60, get micro USB device.
Yeah.
Looking at the health gadgets I bought this year, about half of them were micro and the other half were mini or were USB-C for the same price points. So it just seems like we still have a long way to go to get everyone on USB-C.
Yeah, that's a good point. But fortunately for us, since we tend to be Apple-centric for a lot of stuff we do, Apple itself is moving towards USB-C. There's only a few things left that you require Lightning. The AirPods Pro, for one thing. Right, it's either wireless or the charging case, I mean, and the iPhone itself, but the iPad Pro and the Beats Flex, the $50 headset, are all USB-C. So they're moving in the right direction, and that's why last year I think I bought a bunch of USB-C hubs with PD ports, various wattages of PD ports, because I started getting a lot of USB-C. Computing devices and peripherals, it made sense to have a bunch instead of having the power supply, which is why Apple pulled their power supply, but that's a whole nother thing. I'm surprised you said that, but I can see what you're saying.
Yeah.
And it's probably cheaper to go with micro USB, right? Because there's less intelligence behind it.
I guess we have to wait until they can pull an Apple and just send you the device and assume you have a USB-C cable.
Yeah.
And never have to send a cable. Then it'll make it much cheaper to go to USB-C.
Yeah.
And the last thing that I think in 5 years will finally have mainstream will be cloud computing. Now, for those of you in business and those of you who are not tech civilians, cloud computing is a norm from about 2010 at this point.
Yeah.
You know, being store things and collaborate in the cloud and all of that. But where I'm talking specifically is the education markets. Teachers and students have never really gotten into the cloud. Google Classroom, I think, is the closest thing that has come. But when you look at what the average K-12 or high or college teacher or student has, it's a mismatch of sometimes it's a modern thing, sometimes it's something based, if you look at Blackboard and WebCT and, those are older platforms that still function very much like they did in 2000, 2005. Even Canvas, which is a newer learning management system, still has some elements to it where you go, this should not be as difficult as this is, So I'm thinking that once teachers have gotten, the taste with the pandemic of being able to keep things in the cloud, not, keeping things on pencil and paper or the one USB stick that they carry around that has their, grades on it, I think they're not going to want to take a step backwards to local network only or local computer only. And I think students are going to be the same way. They're going to say, well, if last year during the pandemic you could put all of my assignments online and I never had to take physical homework home with me, why can't you do that this year so that when I'm in class I don't have to also worry about grabbing, writing down what the homework assignment is and taking the textbook home with me and those sorts of things. So,
yeah,
my hope.
It's interesting you say that, because even for myself, I think it was only in early 2019, so 2 years ago now, that I finally made the move from our, local area network server, our, venerable G drive, to move everything over to, Microsoft OneDrive for Business or SharePoint Document Library, or I don't think I was a Teams user back then, but, one of those two things. And by the time the pandemic hit in, a little less than a year ago, I had completed that move. So nothing was left on the land drive. And when the day came that they said, hey, you got to go start working home tomorrow for a while. And turned up to be 10 months so far. It's like, okay, I've got everything with me. I don't have to, I'm just going to pull my notebook out of off of the hub and take it home. That was pretty much it. Everything I needed, I knew where everything I needed. I could find everything. And that was great. Communicated to everybody. So yeah, I see what you're saying. And even a personal level, I've only had one virtual video conference lunch with friends since this whole thing started. It just, for whatever reason. And even then, it's like, how are we going to do this? You know, we ended up using Zoom, but, you know, there Skype was a possibility, and even Teams was a possibility, the personal edition. But it was still a question. And this was in, I think we did it in November or December. So not that long ago. So there are still things in the cloud that are questioned. I do wonder about, you know, the thing you brought up earlier, though, that's the increase in pricing. You know, as Google finally decided that, you know, infinite is not is finite for Google Photos, and they're pulling the plug on that. And I wonder what else is going to change over time as companies, you know, try to fix their revenue model, assuming, you know, things don't quite go back to normal over, even with the vaccine and stuff. You know, I was surprised to see Google be the first one. Maybe I shouldn't have, but I was surprised. And I wonder, you know, where Microsoft and the other big players, Adobe, you know, with Creative Cloud and so forth, how they're going to play into this whole model. It's a little bit concerning. And of course, we're starting to see a slight upward trend in prices for streaming, you know, media services. Netflix, I think, bumped the price up $1 a month, which is, you know, not world-ending. But, you know, it is now a lot more expensive than it was when I started Netflix in 2010, I think, right after I got my first iPad, where it was, I think, $6 or $7 a month. It was really inexpensive. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how this all pans out for people. And in general, you know, with the economy kind of still wavering, despite the, you know, roaring stock market and stuff, and a lot of people are still suffering in terms of trying to make ends meet, and one wonders how these price increases will affect overall adoption of things, or if people will have to say, well, I'm going to have to tighten my belt and, you know, do without some of this stuff.
Very true. It'll be interesting to see where we go with the pricing and what companies feel they can charge and what the market will go with.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And even, you know, during this whole pandemic thing, I got every possible streaming service because I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen. So, well, you know, if things go south, at least I'll be entertained as the world ends. But, you know, I'm going to have to think about it, you know, in the next couple of years. Like, what do I really want to pay for going forward, especially if prices start rising and things? It'll be an interesting next couple of years, that's for sure. That's for sure. All righty. That's about all I've got, John. Anything else?
No, that was what I had. I think we're off to a running start this year, and we'll see how where the year takes us tech-wise.
Yep. And I want to thank our friends for joining us over the last couple of weeks of the, you know, of 2020. Sven and Frank and Paul, and I'm trying to think. I think I'm leaving out somebody. Oh, Don! How can I forget Don? Don Sorcinelli. So thank our buddies for joining us.
I'm glad you remembered his last name. You might be forgetting your own, but you remembered Don.
Yeah, there you go, Don. See, I couldn't remember mine, but I remember yours. Joining us for 3 weeks in a row in some cases. So thank you, fellas. And, you know, we'll have you back soon. I keep thinking, John, we need to reach out to some of our friends, you know, across the Atlantic Ocean. Let's think about that. I was thinking, you know, maybe Arnie or, I don't know, Elio or whoever's available.
We can expand out a little bit. And, you know, I was looking back and realizing that we had some guests on in 2016 we haven't had in a while, too. So
yeah,
maybe we'll read the archives and see who we can get to come on and chat with us.
Yeah, we need to reach out to Jason. And, you know, Jack's on the mend. He had a little bit of a recovery period, but he's doing fine. So maybe Jack will be on when he feels a little bit more up to it. And and also some friends who, you know, I've long wanted to have. I mentioned Eric Hicks, but we've, you know, for whatever reason, we haven't been able to connect. But we know how to reach him. He knows how to reach us. We'll reach out to Eric and a few other folks and see if they have time. And that's the other thing too, right? Not everybody has time to do this stuff. It's crazy in general, even before the pandemic, and it's even crazier now, I'm betting, for a lot of people. So, any rate, friends, we will reach out to you over the next couple of weeks and months and check on your availability. If you're not available 1 week, maybe another week or another month, and we'll try to get together and share what your experiences were like during the pandemic and before, and what you're doing now. Okay, so that's the first podcast for 2021, and we'll talk to you next time.